It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Well, you know, we've talked over the past several weeks about, you know, some elder law issues and really protecting assets from long-term health care spend down, nursing home expenses, you know, those type things. I think Ken had a good question last week at the end as we were kind of wrapping up, and that led us into the accountability of assets between husband and wife when we're talking about Medicaid eligibility and Medicaid application.
Right.
What a lot of folks don't realize is that, you know, whether the husband or the wife is the person who is having to go into a nursing home facility, that all the assets of husband and wife that are countable assets would be countable to determine whether the applicant would, you know, the person going into the nursing home would be eligible.
Right. Okay.
So, and Cecil mentioned it in the program last week that, you know, you would think that you would be able to separate those assets out by having a prenuptial agreement, or some type of contractual agreement, or even if the parties were separated, but that's really not the case. The only way to legally separate those assets apart would be, unfortunately, to be divorced. So Medicaid does count everything of husband and everything of wife, even if either one of the two is having to go into the nursing home facility. Now, there's some specific provisions in the law that allow for what's called the community spouse, which is the spouse who's not having to go into the nursing home, which they call in the law the institutionalized spouse. I don't really like that word, that term, but it is what it is. And we'll talk about those in a moment.
So, Ben, what we're saying here is that a typical, you know, an everyday thing that happens is that the husband says, well, you know, that's my IRA. That's my retirement account. That's my, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 or $150,000 retirement account. That's not my wife's retirement money. That's my retirement money. And so therefore, surely they're not going to look at my retirement money because my wife has advanced Alzheimer's or whatever the process might be, and she is the one that is particularly possibly going to need some sort of long-term care. But unfortunately, Wes and I have to answer, oh, we're so sorry, Mr. Jones. Absolutely. They will also look at at that retirement asset, which is in your name. So they are going to look at all of the assets that are in either the name of the husband and wife. Another permutation of those same facts is, well, my daughter is on that account. You know, that CD, that CD at the certain bank, is in my name and in my son's name, and it's been that way for 10 or 15 years. That CD is in my name and my daughter's name. And so therefore they're not going to include that, are they? Or possibly they're only going to include half of that. Okay. Well, the answer again, unfortunately, is no, because you have access
to all of it.
Yes. Just like your wife as a spouse in North Carolina has access in the marriage to the benefit of your retirement account, your IRA. Therefore, Medicaid is going to look at all of those assets. And what Wes is leading up to here is that they take all of the assets and they take a snapshot of these things now, Ben, and they look at the total value of everything. Right now we're talking about the liquidity.
Right.
And then they divide that liquidity down the middle. And they allocate one half of it to the husband and one half to the wife. And it doesn't matter, again, I have to emphasize, whether all of it is in the name of the husband.
Yes.
Or all of it is in the name of the wife. Or whether or not there's a prenuptial agreement. Or who earned it. Or who brought it into the marriage. All of these issues really, unfortunately, are irrelevant in the context of Medicaid planning. You know, I'm going to veer off here a little bit, Ben. You know, it's always interesting because we lawyers have to look at the facts in light of the analysis that we're applying.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes for estate tax purposes or for estate planning or for, let's say, creditor issues,
mm-hmm.
or let's say divorce.
Right.
The analysis of these facts would be very different. You know, it does make a difference in a divorce who brought the assets into
right.
the marriage,
right.
you see, but not in Medicaid law. So we have to look at the law that we are applying to the facts. And this is kind of somewhat, if you will, hopefully I'm not too off track here, but somewhat of a shock to maybe some of our listeners right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're thinking, oh, but I've heard that if it's my asset, it's separate property.
Yeah.
Well, that's in a divorce context, okay, mm-hmm. not in a Medicaid context. So again, they look at all of these assets, Ben, they then divide them down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And they allocate one half to the person who is known as the community spouse who will remain in the home. And the other half they allocate to the, as Wes said, the terminology was the person who is going to go into a facility or into an institution, which is a terrible word. But that's the way it's looked at.
I guess part of that justification, not just probably under North Carolina law anyway, but others, is that there's a marital responsibility to care for each other. So I guess that perhaps is some of the justification for that.
Yeah, that's part of it. And, you know, Medicaid law is different from state to state, of mm-hmm. course, but it's a federal program. Mm-hmm. It's administered differently from state to state. And so when you look at the law from a federal perspective, a nationwide perspective, it's consistent in that everything of husband and everything of wife is countable.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, North Carolina, that's what we're talking about here on the program today, of course, is not going to, you know, be able to go change that long-standing Medicaid law with regard to the countability, you know, of assets.
Because mm-hmm.
then we get into issues about assets being gifted between spouses. We get into assets that are maybe, you know, jointly held, and are we going to count all of it or half of it? I think that this is somewhat speculation, but I think that, you know, when the Medicaid program was put in place with regard to long-term care from a federal perspective, I think that the idea was there, we need to make our job as simple as possible to try to determine what assets this
mm-hmm.
family unit has.
Right, right.
And if we start splitting out husband and wife, it's going to be more difficult. Now, we also see that in the context of personal property, because, you know, Medicaid doesn't have the right, and they don't want to be bothered with counting things in the home.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to know what TVs you have, what jewelry you have, what clothing you have, what personal property assets you have to determine if you're over that threshold for Medicaid eligibility. That's too burdensome for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's too difficult. They have enough to deal with.
Sure.
Anyway,
yeah.
So they try to streamline the process just as much as possible. Another example, when we're looking at the value of real property, real estate, whether it be the home, whether it be the family farm, whether it be whatever it is, they don't look at fair market value at all. They look at tax value because then we don't get into opinions
right.
as it relates to the value of the property of experts.
They can just look it up and
look it up, public record, tax value, boom, that's what we use.
You say they don't look at personal property. So
right.
so could somebody actually invest in expensive art, hang it up, and it's not going to be counted?
The answer to that question, that's funny, Ben, because sometimes clients ask hard questions like that. You almost want to bite your tongue, you know, but you feel obligated as an attorney
yeah.
to answer the question. So, yes, under the eyes of the law, yes, things in the home.
Mm-hmm.
They don't count those. They do count a vehicle. You
mm-hmm.
know, if you have more than one vehicle, they'll
yeah,
count.
Well, you can look that up, too. As
well,
far as
that, that's right. But that is personal property.
Yeah.
But they do allow you to have one vehicle. So, mm-hmm. now, what are we talking about here when we're looking at a situation where we have either husband or wife having to go into a care facility and we have assets of the marriage?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that apply? Well, basically, as Cecil indicated, a snapshot of all the assets are taken. We're going to look at whatever real estate is in either name. It
mm-hmm.
could be you know, the home. It could be any real estate. And we'll look at that first. We're going to look at savings. We're going to look at cash value and life insurance policies. We're going to look at annuities. We're going to look at anything that there might be out there. And right off the cuff, if prudent planning is done, we can protect the real estate. So the real estate can be taken off the radar screen completely. I mean, there are ways to, ways to do that properly.
Right.
And one of the ways not to do that is just transfer it to the kid's name, because that would create a sanction period. But once we look at that snapshot and we see what the countable assets are, then we know that the individual who is applying for the Medicaid cannot ultimately have more than $2,000 of countable assets. Now, that term countable assets is a kind of a moving target. You know,
right.
But Medicaid allows that spouse to keep one half of all countable assets up to a certain amount. It's not one half of all the countable assets.
Right.
There's a max on that, which is just over $120,000. So if we had $500,000 of countable assets, we'd have, you know, about 380 on one side, and then 120 she could keep.
All right. We'll come back with more here with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, in just a moment. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for joining us here on Let's Talk Legal. If you would like to call in with a question, you may do so.
Call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
All right. We were at a point of accountable assets. We're talking about that some more. And then you were going to talk about the community spouse.
Right. This provision in the Medicaid law that allows for one half of the countable assets to be retained in the family up to a certain amount, which is a little over $120,000, is called the Community Spouse Resource Allowance. And, you know, the idea there in the Medicaid laws is that, you know, if we have one spouse who's sick and the other who's not, or at least not having to go into a nursing home, we don't want to leave the marital unit destitute where they can't even function
right.
at all. So that is, you know, in the law as it relates to that. So that's important to recognize that, because as attorneys who deal with these issues, we many times are dealing with the family before the application for Medicaid goes in. And some planning techniques can be used in order to increase how much the family can keep as it relates to that.
Right.
Some of the things that are allowed under the law are a little bit complicated, but generally what we want to do is we want the countable assets, as far as the liquid assets, to be as high as possible at the time of Medicaid application, so the community spouse can keep, or the community spouse resource allowance can be as high as possible. Then we have, because we're splitting that. We want to keep more because, and then deal with whatever we have to deal with. Because a lot of times maybe we'll be in a situation where we're wanting that community spouse resource allowance to be just as high as possible, and then we've got to spend some down. But we're spending down on things like improving the home that the wife is still in.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Prepaying the funeral for both husband and wife. Okay. It could be that there's two old vehicles. So what we decide to do, since wife is healthy and she's
still driving,
liquidate those, get a more reliable vehicle. Of course, as we talked about a moment ago, we're allowed to have one vehicle.
Right.
You know, so, you know, some of these, and that's just three things. I mean, there's multiple things, and every situation is different. But
and the community spouse on that score doesn't even have to be able to drive. They have to. They could have a caretaker driving.
That's correct. You know,
driving
we need
the daisy thing.
All of this needs to be done in absolute good faith,
right?
You know, and above board. But in the event that, you know, she can't drive, that doesn't matter. Driving Miss Daisy's fine. You know, we'll come pick her up, take her to her doctor's appointments, take her to church, take her to her bridge.
Take her to those kinds of things.
Visit her husband. But, you know.
Right.
You know,
and the older you get, the more visits you got to make to doctors and things like
right.
that.
Right. 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 So the law, you know, recognizes, you know, those opportunities for us to spin down, you know, in that way. But I hope that the listeners kind of, you know, recognize by listening to us over the past several weeks that there are so many planning opportunities with regard to this. We don't want any of our loved ones to end up having to go into a nursing home facility. But in my experience, I've been practicing about 16 years. You know, you hear that a lot. You sit across the table from clients and they say, well, no matter what happens to mom, no matter what happens to dad, we're going to keep them at home no matter what. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want for my father. That's what I want. That's what everybody wants.
Sure.
But what Cecil and I see on a relatively consistent basis is, you know, the way that works in life and the way it works in the world of Medicare as well is that, you know, a lot of times the individual ends up having to go into the nursing or have to go into the hospital. And because of a stroke, because of a fall, because of, you know, some type of event that requires them to go to the hospital. And then the hospital finds themselves at discharge time in a position where they really have to discharge this person into a safe environment. Mm-hmm. And maybe for that physical therapy, for that rehab, to try to get them back to the point where they can thrive in the home place.
Right.
Well, that's kind of where the rubber hits the road then, because the person is then discharged to the nursing home for the physical therapy. Maybe they get better within their 20 days that Medicare will cover.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't. And if they don't, then, you know, a lot of times the medical experts are saying mom, dad is going to really need to stay here longer. And then after that 20 days of Medicare, in most cases, we go into private pay, which is $200-$300 a day.
Right.
So, you know, the planning techniques that Medicaid allows us to use are very important to take into consideration.
Yeah, because you're talking about really using up a lot of assets very quickly,
right,
in that situation.
Ben, some last-minute tidbits on this area. Number one is we mentioned the word long-term care. Well, of course, there is long-term care insurance, and that gets brought up in conversation with us often. And it's absolutely true that if you have a long-term care policy insurance, then the benefits of that are going to, we hope are going to apply.
Mm-hmm.
The problem there is that some folks have bought these policies years ago where the daily limit is much, much lower than the actual cost of care.
You'll have some more out of pocket.
So you still have out of pocket. That's
right.
The first thing. The second thing, of course, is that sometimes some of these companies are not viable. I must say that. It is so unfortunate and sad to have to tell a client that we did some research relative to your policy and the company, you know, is bankrupt, not in business anymore, things of that nature.
Met with someone yesterday on that exact issue,
paid
premiums for years. And no question under the terms of the policy that the long-term care should have been covered. It was not covered.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even get their premiums back because the business went belly up.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that happens sometimes.
Correct.
Not that much, but it's important to research your companies before you jump into a long-term care policy.
We'll have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. I'd like to sneak in a phone call, or you can call right now.
Call 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
And online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak and Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. A question from someone who couldn't stay on the line. They're asking about like hard assets like gold bars, or maybe you can take a coin collection or even something.
Well, okay, so coin collection is probably a not countable asset because that's something that is normally probably going to be held in the home in a safe, something like that. I think you get into gold bars, I think you're in a gray area there. I think that if you have that personal property, if you read the Medicaid law to the letter of the law, it probably would indicate that something like a gold bar, which is tangible, you could hold in your hand.
Easy to determine the value.
Exactly, based on, you know, weight.
Yeah.
I think that under the letter of the law, you probably could make a really strong argument that that's a non-countable asset. But you have to disclose that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, we do not play the game of not disclosing assets
right.
to Medicaid.
How about
personal property they don't care about. Mm-hmm. Gold bar, I think you've got to disclose it, and then I think we then get into a discussion under the law as it relates to whether that is countable or not. And frankly, I haven't dealt with that particular mm-hmm. type asset before. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little gray area, but potentially we would be able to keep it out as far as being countable. What do you think about that, Cecil?
I agree with that. I think that, I have certainly seen, in an estate context where gold is held for investment purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then we are over there on the investment side of things. Last but not least, Ben, the income stream. So many folks come in and the first thing out of the gate that they talk to us about is, well, you know, my pension is this and my Social Security is that and
mm-hmm.
my investment income coming in is the following. How does all that apply?
Right.
You notice what Wes and I have spoken about is all about your assets.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about at all what your income happens to be. The income into the household.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That is looked at very, very differently. And the bottom line is that the income of the respective person in the facility is going to be used and applied
mm-hmm.
toward their care.
Right.
This can be an extraordinarily devastating circumstance in many files because when two folks are living together, husband and wife, elderly folks, and
mm-hmm.
they're relying on both Social Securities to make ends meet, okay,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden the husband is in the facility, and that larger Social Security is no longer available to the household, and the wife's sometimes smaller Social Security is all that there is.
Right.
This is, of course, extraordinarily difficult for the community spouse. Now, with all that said, with it said that the general rule that is that the income follows the person's care,
mm-hmm.
There are some exceptions where those things are grossly out of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are, then there is a formula that can be applied that allocates some of the income back to the community spouse or the person in the home.
If you want to find out more, you want to contact the folks at Harbell & Collins Attorneys at Law at harbellandcollins.com, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, 252-726-9050.